You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show, where you get a mix of National Public Radio news and local features. So, John, here's a quote from Allison Roman in her new book called Dining In. I promise I will never ask you to make something in two skillets if it can be done in one.
Whoa.
Isn't that kind of cool?
Yeah.
She's not going to ask you to buy an ingredient you've never heard of unless I can defend it within an inch of my life and tell you 20 other things to do with it. So you don't usually
She's got some moxie.
I would say that. You don't usually see promises from authors and cookbook authors on the back of their books, but it's a little different. It's called Dining In, and Allison Roman joins us now. Good job on the promises.
Oh, thank you. I hope to underpromise and overdeliver. We'll see.
Hey, let's go right to this skillet. What kind of skillet do you use?
You know, it's funny. So I just moved apartments, actually. And so I kind of took real stock and inventory about the kind of kitchen stuff that I needed. And I realized I pretty much only use, I use a 10-inch cast iron and I use a 12-inch stainless steel. And those are the two skillets I own. I recently purchased my first nonstick skillet. Just to see if I like using it. But I find that, you know, my one skillet really does the job.
So you don't like the, what do you call it? Teflon? What was it?
Nonstick.
Nonstick. You don't like? Why
nonstick.
Don't you like them? What's the deal?
Well, you know, you can't really brown anything in them. I find them to be just, there's something about the way if you sear a chicken breast or a chicken thigh, even like, they don't get as crispy and the bits don't stick to the skillet, which is part of why, you know, you can deglaze that skillet and make your sauce, and doing it in that nonstick will never really allow you to get there.
See, her pans have moxie, just like Allison
does. Well, you know,
does.
It's great for things like scrambled eggs and omelets, and, you know, sometimes cooking fish can be really nice to do in a nonstick, but for most other things, I really just, and also you can't put them in the oven. So.
Yeah, sure.
Well, so tell us a little bit about why you wanted to do this book, to get people excited about cooking at home instead of going out to restaurants all the time.
Well, you know, I feel like we have sort of fetishized restaurant culture and chefs, and, you know, it's sort of like an us versus them. And I hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm not a chef. You know, I just am a home cook. And I think that home cooks can be just as exciting and fun as restaurant chefs. And I've done both. I've worked in restaurant kitchens and home kitchens. And, you know, to me, there's really no difference if you know, the right thing to do and when to do it and the right kinds of ingredients to use and, you know, cutting your vegetables a little bit differently can really make your dinner that you're making at home feel a little bit nicer or more like you would have at a restaurant. And, you know, I think as, at least in New York, you know, people get a little fatigued with, you know, waiting in line or having to spend so much money and, you know, fighting for a reservation or a table at a cool new restaurant. But, you know, I think your kitchen could be a cool new restaurant if you have the right recipes.
So at the beginning of the book, you help us out by telling us some of the staples we should have in our pantry. Give us an idea of what you suggest.
Well, you know, I kind of broke it down between the things that I like eating the most, which are, you know, salty things and spicy things and crunchy things. But my pantry is actually pretty minimal, and I don't like to buy a ton of ready-made things like condiments, but I will, you know, have things like, you know, I have two different types of olive oil. I have flaky salt. I have tahini. I have, you know, three different types of chili flake, and they all really serve their purpose. And I find that, you know, you don't need a million things in your pantry if you have 20 really good things, you know, canned tomatoes, chickpeas, things like that.
So you have a lot of vegetables in this book, but it's by no means a vegetarian cookbook. But let's start with some vegetable recipes. Talk about how you suggest we cook beets.
Well, the beets are interesting to me because I do love sweet vegetables. I don't love sweet potatoes or carrots or beets. I find them to be sometimes too sweet on the plate. So the way that I kind of remedied that, because I really do like the way they look and I love their texture once they're roasted. So I roasted them in some foil, just like you would for a roasted beet, but I kind of douse them in vinegar first, so they get a little tangy when they roast. So in addition to being sweet and tender, they've also got a little bit of acidity to them when they come out of the oven, which is nice.
And let's talk about tahini and pine nuts. Now, is that going to be in your pantry on a regular basis?
Tahini is, yeah. And, you know, it's funny, my freezer is just full of nuts and seeds all the time. I think I mentioned that in the book as well. And, you know, because once you buy a bag of pine nuts, I don't buy another bag for a long time. You know, it's not something that I'm reaching for constantly. And they can be expensive, So and tahini is something that I do have all the time, and that is pretty affordable. But, you know, I love to give swaps. So, you know, for a recipe where I call for pine nuts, I want to say you can also use chopped hazelnuts or chopped almonds, you know, just so people don't feel hemmed in by, oh, I either can't find pine nuts or they're so expensive, or, you know, I have almonds at home already. Can I just use those? And the answer is yes, you can. I'd like people to feel like they can be flexible.
Cumin roasted cauliflower and dates with tahini and pine nuts. It's something you're not going to find in my kitchen.
Right, but if you have, you know, the cauliflower gets roasted with olive oil and cumin and salt and pepper, which those are all pretty basic things. And then everything else is, you know, maybe you're buying tahini, but then you'll find other ways to use it. There's a few recipes in the book that call for it. So I encourage you to buy something, and then I'll give you a few other recipes, you know, to explore with that ingredient.
What does tahini taste like?
Tahini is, it's a paste made from sesame seeds. So just like peanut butter is a paste made from peanuts, tahini is a paste made from sesame seeds. So it has a bit of a nutty flavor, not unlike peanut butter or almond butter, but it's a little bit more, it's a bit creamier, and it has a bitterness to it that I really enjoy. Kind of like, you know, like endive or something that you're eating. But once you can whisk a little bit of water into it, and olive oil, lemon juice, and garlic, and make an amazing dressing for salads and vegetables.
So when I hear you say cumin roasted cauliflower, I think of burning cauliflower in the oven. What's the process? I mean, how long is it in, and do you do anything before you put it in the oven?
Well, you know, I think that, so cauliflower, the vegetable itself, is made of mostly water. And so you really would have to put it in the oven for a million years for it to truly burn. Most of our ovens at home are not hot enough to do any sort of damage to the cauliflower. It's a pretty well-protected vegetable. But, you know, I roasted some last night actually at home, and I was surprised at how long it takes to get any sort of golden roasted color on it. So you want to do it at a pretty high temperature. I think I say 450 in the book.
Wow.
But, you know, like I said, it's not going to burn. Unless you're working in an industrial strength oven or a wood burning oven or something, it's not going to burn before it gets tender and a little bit of golden and cooked through properly.
We're talking with Allison Roman. Her new cookbook is out. It's called Dining In, Highly Cookable Recipes. Let's talk about some of the meats in here. You have a recipe for vinegar braised chicken with farro and watercress. What does the vinegar do to the chicken? Tell us more about it.
Well, vinegar sort of acts as a tenderizer almost with this chicken, but it also adds just a bit of acidity, you know, during the cooking process as opposed to afterwards. So oftentimes, you know, we'll have a chicken breast and we'll finish it with a squeeze of lemon before we eat it. But this kind of just puts the acidity and that flavor and seasoning there from the beginning. And otherwise, the dish is very simple. It's chicken, salt, pepper, garlic, you know, a whole grain and water pretty much. And so it's like a kind of a hearty stew, but adding that vinegar in the beginning, you know, almost like a chicken adobo or something, just kind of makes the entire thing a little bit more tender and a lot more seasoned from the beginning. So you don't have to do a ton of stuff afterwards.
So I want to get, what kind of salt did you say you have in your pantry?
I have at least two kinds, sometimes three, but I always have a kosher salt and I have a flaky salt. And the flaky salt is like a finishing salt.
So how do you use salt then? I'm a little bit confused. It seems like these are
I use it everywhere.
but you don't use a traditional salt then, because what you're talking about is better then, in your opinion.
Well, no. Well, kosher salt is a traditional salt.
It is? Okay.
Salt. So yeah. When you go to a diner, it's on the table is iodized salt, and that's not really something that people are buying in the grocery store. Typically, you're buying either sea salt or kosher salt, and that is, you know, at this point, I think personal preference. It's just the grains are smaller with the sea salt, and the grains are a little coarser with the kosher salt. And I find that easier to pick up and to season things with. But again, kind of a personal preference. And then the flaky salt is sort of a salt that is a special occasion salt. And some people may find it a bit unnecessary, but I promise you, if you were to buy it and start using it on things, you would really notice a difference. You're not cooking with it so much as you are finishing things with it. So you can put them on, you know, on top of your salad. It stays very crunchy and salty, and so it adds texture as well as saltiness.
Speaking of salt, salted butter and chocolate chunk shortbread. That sounds, yeah, that sounds
read
amazing.
Read the rest of that title, though, John.
Or why would I make another chocolate chip cookie ever again?
See, this is your...
Yeah, she's got some. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I have opinions, that's for sure. So you definitely need flaky salt to make these cookies. But, you know, this is a basic shortbread recipe. And it starts with salted butter. And I use salted butter because it has a bit more flavor and, again, seasoning than regular unsalted butter. And you can use unsalted butter here if that's what you're accustomed to baking with. You just need to add a little bit of salt during the mixing process. But basically, this is sort of a hybrid between a shortbread and a chocolate chip cookie. And to me, it's the best of both worlds. You have a really buttery, tender shortbread. You have chocolate chunks. You've got salt. You've got crispy edges. I think it's the perfect cookie.
That's one of the recipes I really want to try. And also, because eggs are my personal favorite food, you have a recipe for baked eggs with crushed chickpeas, chorizo, and breadcrumbs.
And the photo's amazing.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, we ate that for breakfast after we took that photo. I'm a big fan of skillet dishes. And again, that's why I like a skillet that you can put in the oven. You know, it's just, you cook it on the stove, you finish it in the oven. To me, that's a much easier. But this is basically, you know, you can use any meat. I like to use dried chorizo, but any sausage would work. You add your chickpeas or some tomato and onion and spices and garlic, and you kind of cook it all down. So the texture is a little bit coarse. You don't want whole chickpeas. You kind of smash them at the back of your spoon, and then you plop in some eggs. You finish it in the oven so that the whites just get barely set and the yolk stays runny. And from there, you can serve it with crusty bread or sprinkle it with breadcrumbs or do whatever you want with it, or just eat it straight from the skillet.
So you see, you cook it on the stove and finish in the oven. What does that mean? Uh-huh. I mean, what purpose does the oven... Are you just talking like minutes?
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's just a few minutes. It's just to cook the eggs. So you only need one skillet the entire time.
Okay.
So you put the eggs on top of the chickpea tomato mixture, and by putting that whole skillet with the raw eggs there, the eggs kind of cook in the oven rather than having to fry them separately in another skillet.
All right, now I get it. And also, I want to ask you about the best baked beans. Tell us about your baked beans.
Well, I'm from California. I'm from Los Angeles specifically. And when I came to the East Coast and I tried baked beans, I thought they were too sweet and too mushy. And so I did a version that doesn't have any ketchup or brown sugar or molasses in it. And they're just very savory. They've got wine and garlic. They're finished with some breadcrumbs that you pop in the oven. And I think they're amazing. You cook them with like some big fat pieces of bacon. Again, I've done it with different types of sausage, and that's amazing too. But just the idea that you can take these really nice beans, put them with some pork products, and then put them in the oven and cover them with breadcrumbs. And it's the best side dish, I think, ever, especially now. It's still a little cold outside.
I want to ask you about radishes. I really like radishes, but I only ever really eat them raw. I don't usually see recipes that have them cooked. What are they like to cook with? Do they taste the same? What do you find?
You know, I actually prefer them raw over anything, but when they are cooked, I like to cook them very, very briefly and very, very fast. So there's one recipe that calls this butter tossed radishes with fresh tartar. And basically, you're heating up your butter in the skillet. You're tossing whole radishes in there just to kind of coat them in that melted butter and soften the outside slightly. And then finishing them with this mixture of sesame seeds and thyme and a spice called sumac, which is very good. And, you know, they kind of taste like a turnip or something, you know, a turnip or a rutabaga. They're a root vegetable. So they've got, you know, that kind of flavor. But when you cook them just very, very briefly, they stay crunchy and they stay fresh, just kind of gently warmed on the outside, which I think is really nice.
This is so unfair talking to you when you haven't eaten anything all day.
I know. We got to get you guys some breakfast.
Yeah.
So, here's the deal, Allison. You know, we talk a lot about cookbooks. We do a lot of reviews on cookbooks. And the photography is obviously extremely important. And your photography in here is amazing. But so is the photo of you, because I always look, we form an opinion of who you are by what we see. And you have you have a full-length picture in here, and you have the back of your hand on your forehead, and you have your origami little tattoo on your arm. And I think it's I think it's amazing. I want to ask you about your tattoo. What's the story behind that?
Oh, that's so funny. Well, it was my first tattoo. I got it when I was 21 years old, and I was living in San Francisco, and I This is going to sound totally crazy, but I knew I wanted a tattoo, and I didn't know what I wanted, but I woke up one day from a dream, and I had a dream that I got an origami tattoo. And so I went and I called the tattoo artist and I said, this is what I want. And, you know, he helped me make a design, and that was that. And I just went and I got it, and that was it.
Outstanding. Good for you.
It was a pretty impulsive decision, but I'm still quite happy with it.
And also, I mean, so you didn't have a dream of where this tattoo was. How do you decide where to put a tattoo on your arm? You put it on the inside of your bicep.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's present, but it's not super obvious.
Yeah, and there you go.
That photo is funny because it was actually an outtake. That wasn't going to be the photo that I put in the book, but we realized it was the most me. So that's the one we went with. But definitely was not the intention. But yeah, I think it had the most personality.
I think that would be a picture of you when you go to the pantry and, oh my gosh, there's no tahini nuts in the pantry.
I know, exactly. That's exactly the face that I make when I'm out of tahini.
Tahini nuts, John. Come on. Hey, you can find out how to follow Allison Roman on Facebook or about her book at allisonroman.com. It's called Dining In. Allison, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on Northern Community Radio. Does this inspire you? Are you going to start cooking, putting your cast iron skillet in the oven?
Well, because I never gave that any thought. I mean, you're right. You can't properly singe something in a Teflon. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's what they're called, you know, smooth skillet. And she said you can do eggs. You can do a few things in there. But you showed me the picture. There's a picture in here of eggs, and they're burned on the edge. And what I was going to say to you before we even did this interview is, how do you do that? You really can't do that very well on a Teflon.
Right, but on a cast iron.
But on a cast iron, you can. It's just a lot of work when you're done because you're going to make it, put it in the oven, things get scorched on the bottom. You really got to work to clean your cast iron skillet. But
I have three cast iron skillets, and they are from Tom's grandparents. That's how long they've been around.
Yeah.
And I use them every day.
And when you're done, do you clean them and rub them with a little oil?
Yeah, I do.
You do.
Yeah,
so
and you don't
no
use you never
them.
Use soap on them.
Oh.
You just rinse them and with a you know, the metal kind of
Brillo pad?
What is that? Well, what is that called? Steel wool. Is that what it's called? Yeah, so you scrub the stuff out of there and then rinse it in hot water.
You
and it
never
comes out
use
so
soap.
Never soap on a cast iron skillet, yeah.
What the heck?
There you go. That's what I found out.
But sometimes you may have to scrape it because it's burnt on there.
So
use a spatula or something to...
Use the scrubber.
Just the scrubber. You got to throw that sucker away.
No, then I actually put it in the dishwasher. Washes it.
Oh.
So, but then once I've cleaned it, then I put it on the stove and I put the heat on.
Lightly.
And then the water burns off. Then I put in some oil and rub it around the whole thing and then put it away.
Wow.
So there you go.
I got to learn to do this more. Well, seriously. And I'm assuming you can get small ones. So like if you want to make...
There's like little tiny... We have a smaller one, but there's even little tiny ones you could make like two eggs in, you know, cast irons. But yeah, there's people who are nuts about cast iron, always looking for used ones or really good ones out there. So
when she was talking about her egg skillet stuff, so what she did, she didn't make the egg. She put the egg on and then it was made totally in the oven.
Yeah, so then that means you get like this almost egg sauce because it's going to be kind of a runny egg, right?
Gosh.
You just tap, 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 boom, the egg going out all over. Okay. A little hungry here. Coming up, we've got National Native News.